You're listening to the Whale Scout Podcast with your host, Whitney Negebauer.
Welcome to the Whale Scout Podcast, everyone. My name is Whitney Negebauer, and today we have on Monica Whelan Shields, and she's going to be talking about her book, Endangered Orcas, The Story of the Southern Residents. And this book is fantastic. I read it over a quick trip I did this spring, and I would say the majority of all Whale Scout volunteer naturalists have read the book, and our interns read the book, and I've just heard so much positive feedback on it. And so if you have not read this book yet, you must, and you will learn a lot more about it and a lot more about our author, Monica Whelan Shields, in just one moment. We are back here on the Whale Scout Podcast. We are joined by Monica Whelan Shields, and she is the author of Endangered Orcas, The Story of the Southern Residents. Thank you so much for joining us again today, Monica.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
So today I wanted to talk to you about your book, and we've talked in the past about a variety of topics, but today I really want to take a dive into your book and learn more about it and learn more about your writing process. So what brought you to the whales and to writing in the first place?
Well, my connection with the whales goes back to when I was pretty young, and actually I wrote my first story about whales in first grade, and it was about my mom befriending a killer whale. So my interest in whales and my interest in writing goes way back to a young age. And when I first came on scene with the Southern Residents, I was surprised that there wasn't really a book I could get to read kind of their story and their history. And over the years, as I kept learning more and more about the whales, I continued to be surprised that such a book hadn't been published, and eventually kind of started with a little writer's workshop. A few of us started talking about what a book like that might look like, and it kind of just grew from there until it became Endangered Orcas.
And so what brought you to the whales specifically? Do you remember your first encounter with killer whales, and what sort of kept you coming back?
Yeah, the first time I saw wild killer whales was on a family trip to Alaska when I was 12, and I remember the whole experience very clearly, and we got to see them twice on that trip. And I had already, you know, had a love for whales and dolphins, but it was no turning back from orcas in particular after that trip. And we went home to Portland, Oregon, and I wanted to learn about if there were any orcas closer to home that I could maybe see more often. And that's when I learned about the Southern Residents, and we came up here a few years later on another family vacation to the San Juan Islands, and I met the Southern Residents for the first time, and the rest is history.
And so, you know, you live on San Juan Island, and I know from, you know, being friends with a lot of people that live on the island, that it can be sort of an isolating place and a challenging place to be. You know, what kept you on the island and pursuing your interest in the whales?
Well, I was up here in the summers at first as an intern at the Whale Museum and out at Limekiln making hydrophone recordings of the whales. And then through college, I was working as a naturalist on one of the whale watching boats. And then after I graduated from college is when I moved to San Juan Island full time. And while some people kind of get island fever or miss things about living in the city or living on the mainland, I actually love it and definitely thrive here. In addition to the whales, which of course was the big draw and the reason I wanted to live here in the first place, I like kind of the small town life and being away from the traffic and the city noise and all that. So as a kind of a introvert person and a lover of the outdoors, San Juan Island has been a perfect place to live.
And you sort of alluded to this. I mean, you wear a lot of different hats. I mean, you're a writer, a blogger, a naturalist, photographer, and somehow you also have a quote, real job. How do you juggle it all? And you know, do you feel like there's one hat that fits better than any of the rest? Did I say scientist? There's a scientist as well.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. A lot of us, it's that are involved with the whales, I think, end up wearing many hats, whether it's, you know, educator and activist and photographer. And similarly, a lot of people that live on San Juan Island wear many hats, whether it's working multiple jobs or being involved in multiple organizations in the community. And they've kind of all those different pieces have become part of who I am. And yeah, I've played a lot of different roles in the whale community. I think when we started the Orca Behavior Institute in 2015, I feel like that's when everything kind of came together, where I was able to merge both the education and the advocacy for the whales with my interest in science and research, and combine kind of photography and writing with the sort of the data we're collecting and what we're seeing. So that's probably the hat that fits me best, is kind of the co-founder and president of the Orca Behavior Institute now.
And one of the things I think you are just so great at is communicating science. And so that's really what I think makes this book so good, is that you just found a way to really tell the story of the Southern residents and put it all together in one book and make it very readable and very accessible to people. How did you get started with writing the book? So my understanding was that this was quite a long process.
It was. It was kind of an on-again, off-again project for over 9 years. Like I said, from the very beginning, it was kind of in my mind that a book like this should exist. But I really doubted for a long time that I was the right person to write the book, especially being a relative newcomer on the scene compared to other people that have been here for decades more. But it started as kind of a writing project among four of us here on the island, who kind of had tossed this idea around that this book should exist. And for a while, we would kind of have little writing workshops every month and each write some pieces about the whales from our own experience, and then get together and read them aloud and get feedback and, you know, figure out where they might go in a book and that kind of thing. And as that continued, you know, life happened, and kind of one by one, people had to drop out of the project, but I still felt really strongly that this is something that should happen, and so I kind of continued with it, writing from my own experience, and then realized, you know, if I was going to try and tell the complete story, it really would involve talking to a lot of other people who had experienced the whales in different times and in different ways. And so I ended up doing more than 30 interviews as well to write the book. And I appreciate that you mentioned that the science is kind of accessible in there, because that's so important to me, is that there's all this incredible science going on, but it can be very inaccessible for people if the only way they can read it is in the scientific journal articles, which are sometimes kind of very technical and lots of statistics and stuff. So my inspiration and kind of model for the book was Eric Hoyt's Orca, the Whale Called Killer, because I loved how he summarized, you know, the research and the science of the time with the stories of the whales and the stories of the people around the whales, and I felt like that was a really accessible book. So my goal was to kind of try and do the same thing and make a story that was focused on the Southern residents and kind of told the story up to present time, but including both the science and the stories, and make it something that anyone could pick up and enjoy.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and that's, you know, something that, again, you're really great at, is that communication piece. And I think that's where a lot of people can get sort of tied up or, you know, hung up on the details and the facts, and where a lot of these breakdowns in the whale community can happen, and among activists as well. It's just not fully understanding the science and, you know, not having everyone able to understand it. And so, you know, thank you so much for putting that together and for continuing that process on an ongoing basis. It's very, very helpful for all of us to stay up to date on what's happening with the whales and push for the correct policies and management decisions as well.
Yeah, as you know, the story of the whales has gained more attention in the last couple of years. There are so many people that care so much about these whales and want them to recover, but there really can be you know, sort of a lack of information or a lack of accurate information out there at times. And that's really why I felt like this was the right time to finally finish the book and get it out there. Was, as I mentioned, it was kind of an, you know, ongoing project, and it's like, when is it done? but it you know, everything kind of came together with everything that happened in 2018 with J35 carrying her calf and the whole episode with J50 and trying to intervene to, you know, possibly medicate her and help her recover. And then the whole Orca task force process and so many more people kind of turning their eyes onto these whales. It was like, okay, this is the time, you know, we need the facts out there so people know what's going on, what needs to happen for these whales to recover. And to take all that passion and hopefully, you know, direct it into the things that really will make a difference for these whales going forward.
And so you decided in the end to self-publish this book. And I'm so glad that you did pull the trigger on it and you did get it out. What have the challenges been to self-publishing and what are the benefits?
Yeah, well, originally the plan wasn't to self-publish. I actually had a publishing contract that ended up falling through, and I found myself kind of faced with the decision of, do I try and start over with another publisher, or should I pursue self-publishing? And at this point, the book had been through an extensive editing and review process, so I felt like the manuscript was pretty ready to get out there. And again, just because of the timing of everything, both the time, you know, that I had put into it over the previous 2 years to kind of polish it and get it ready, and then everything that was going on with the whales, I really wanted it to get out sooner rather than later. And I knew that starting over with another publisher would probably be a, you know, a 1 year plus process. So the, you know, the big challenge with self-publishing is also the benefit of self-publishing, and that's that you have complete control over everything. So it does mean, you know, you have to finance all the design and public, you know, publication fees, and anything that comes up has to come out of your own personal pocket. But the trade-off is you get to help guide the design and figure, you know, make sure the book looks like what you want it to look like. You know, you get the final decision on what's included or not included in the book. And in the end, it really ended up being the right decision. Because there, you know, I got to kind of put the book out there in the form that I really wanted it to be. I didn't have to compromise with an editorial board or a design team. You know, I found a couple designers to work with that were just incredible. And really, you know, the cover of the book, I think, just turned out so beautiful. And really, I didn't know what I wanted the cover to look like, but I just kind of told them, you know, what the book meant to me and what my vision was. And they were able to come up with this perfect cover. And it all came together that way. And then I guess the most difficult part for me is it means I'm on my own in terms of marketing. And I love talking about the whales, but I don't really love talking about myself. So it's been a little bit hard to kind of sell myself and get myself out there to promote the book. But the feedback has just been incredible. And it's been an extremely rewarding process.
How did it feel when you saw the cover for the first time?
Well, it was a little bit of back and forth with the designers because they, you know, they gave me several options to pick from and, you know, do I like this one, but then let's modify a couple things. And, you know, I knew we were close, but I, you know, something was still missing. Like the cover that we had at the time was very black and white. And it was kind of a, you know, a dark backlit blow sort of photo. And I really loved the font and kind of the layout, but it didn't quite pop the way I thought. So I sent them a couple other photographs and said, you know, let's keep the same like sort of overall feeling, but what can we do to make it a little more attention grabbing than just kind of a black and white cover? And they came up with this current cover, and as soon as I saw it, I just knew that that was it, and it was done. And again, I'm so thankful for the help I had, because personally, I never would have gone with like an orange cover and orange text and that kind of thing, but it ended up being perfect because it captures not only sort of the urgency, like the red alert status that we're in with endangered orcas, but also at the same time the beauty of like a sunset encounter with these whales and everything that's so magical about seeing them up here. And as soon as I saw the cover, I knew we were done, and that was it.
Yeah, it is stunning, and it is orange, and you can totally see it pops off the shelf at a bookstore. It looks really, really good, and you can just see like the blow of one of the whales kind of like misty and fading into the distance, and so it has that softness that kind of balances the bright orange, like you said. I think it's really cool, and it's one of your photos, right?
It is, yeah, and it was a really special encounter. We were up in Northern Harrow Strait with J-Pod, and this was in 2017. They had returned after, you know, I think it was like a five-week absence in the spring, so it was the first time seeing them after quite a while, and we were the only boat on scene up at sunset, and they were in a resting line, and so just everything about that was kind of a unique experience. Like, we don't see them in resting line that much anymore. It's so rare. You're kind of the only people out there observing the whales, whether you're on shore or on a boat. There's usually at least somebody else there. And it was just one of those magic, kind of perfect encounters that we all dream about with the Southern residents. And so it was really appropriate that ended up being the cover of the book.
And so the book is divided into three sections. So the first is sort of about the whales, and the next section is our human relationship to the whales. And then the third, it goes into a lot of the science about the current status of these endangered whales and their recovery. Was there one part of the book that you enjoyed writing over the others, or any favorite parts that just really tickle you?
It's a great question. The structure of the book was the most difficult piece for me to wrap my head around. It was like, should this be chronological? Should it be ordered by subject? You know, and I went back and forth so many times. And often my writing process is kind of outlining the whole thing ahead of time and figuring out what's going to go where, and then almost writing it from start to finish after I have that plan in place. And this book absolutely did not follow that process at all. I decided in the beginning to just kind of write everything and figure out how the pieces would go together later. And the first problem was that I ended up writing way, way too much. Like the word count of what I originally wrote to what was published, it actually got cut in half. So there's an incredible amount of material that I wrote that ended up not in the book. And again, I was lucky to work with some incredible editors that were able to kind of pare down all that extra weight and put, you know, still keep all the really important elements in there to kind of capture the whole story and keep the themes that were really important to me. And through that kind of back and forth with a couple of editors, the book sort of took its current form, divided that into the three sections that you mentioned, which I think in the end ended up working out really well. In terms of kind of favorite pieces, I really love the stories of the people. So like kind of the portraits of all the different people that watch whales at Limekiln. That was one of the very first pieces I wrote, and I still love it because it kind of captures how the whales bring together people from so many different walks of life, and we all share this singular passion, and it kind of creates this community among people that probably wouldn't have ever crossed paths if it wasn't the whales that kind of brought us all together. Another piece that I really enjoyed was talking about the research and the science and how things had evolved from kind of the earliest days of research up to the most modern research techniques, and how in a lot of ways we're still trying to answer some of the same questions, and, you know, using new technologies. But a lot of what these whales do, even though they're the most studied whales in the world probably, is still a mystery despite decades of study. And I think that's pretty cool.
You know, some of my favorite things, and what I've heard feedback from other Whale Scout volunteers, is they love at the end of each chapter, you include a section with further reading, and it gives resources for people to go and learn even more about what you wrote about in that chapter. So it's really a great leaping off point, too, for a long list of winter reading, which would be fantastic.
Absolutely. It was, you know, this is just one piece. It's really, as much as I wanted to tell the whole story, you can't put everything and all the incredible information that's out there into a single book. And as I, you know, talked to people and read so much material, I really wanted to point people to all these other great resources, but at the same time, I didn't want the text to be bogged down with citations and, you know, footnotes on every page pointing to references. And I really felt like that would make it more of a technical text and less of a, you know, kind of really accessible book. And so I kept going back and forth on, well, do I just list the references in the at the end, and do I list them by chapter, or do I put citations in? And this ended up being a solution that I really liked, so that kind of the credit is given to the researchers who contributed, you know, the information that came up in that chapter, or kind of referenced right there at the end of the chapter. And it also points people who are interested in a particular topic to those other incredible resources that are out there.
And one section in particular that I hear people talk about a lot is you decided to sort of go there, and you decided to talk about some of the politics in the whale community. Can you give us a little snapshot about what that is and why you decided to include it in the book?
Yeah, it was really important to me that that piece of the story was included, about all the conflict and disagreements and long history of kind of divisiveness that unfortunately exists among all the people that really love these whales. And when you get down to it, all really want the same thing, and that's their recovery. And that was one of the pieces that I kind of had some contention about with the publisher when I originally had the publishing deal, was they really wanted that out of the book because they felt like it was too gossipy and not relevant to the story of the whales. But what they didn't get a chance to see was that in all those interviews I did for the book, literally every single interview, whale politics came up in some way, shape, or form. And usually it was brought up by the person I was interviewing, not by me. So it's such an important piece of the story, and it's one of the major reasons that I think we struggle to kind of come together and get done what needs to get done to help these whales recover, as sad as that is. But there's a lot of divisiveness and a lot of controversy, and we kind of create these human politics around almost everything, whether it's whale watching and how should you whale watch, or research and what should the priorities be. And as I wrote in the book, even naming the whales and who gets to give the whales names and who is included in that process, like even that has become incredibly political. And the impacts that it's had, I think, not only on us as people who are, you know, trying to do our best to learn about and share the stories of these whales, but I think it's really had an impact on recovery efforts. And, it's been a roadblock in our ability to kind of all come together and really do what needs to be done.
Do you think that things are this bad in other, you know, conservation for other wild animals?
I think you definitely find politics probably just about everywhere you find people in some way, shape, or form. I think it's kind of in our nature, but I really feel like it's magnified around the whales for some reason. There are people that study creatures that are less charismatic, you know, they're not the charismatic megafauna, they're not in the news all the time, and I'm sure they still have disagreements in politics, but everything just seems, yeah, so, like I said, so magnified around the southern residents. And one person I interviewed even said that, oh, it's almost like the southern residents bring out the worst in us. And I'm still mulling that over and trying to figure that out, because on one hand, I think they bring out the best in us. And like I said, they bring all these different people together, and we connect with them and their environment in such a powerful way. But there is sort of this dark side that is true. It's all these, all this competitiveness and one-upmanship and, us versus them mentality that does kind of permeate a lot of the whale community. And it is something that I felt really hadn't been talked about. So yeah, I did go there, and I feel like it was important that that piece of the story was out there. And like you said, I've probably heard your feedback is similar to what I've heard. I've heard a lot of feedback on that chapter, and For the most part, people are really glad that it was included, and a lot of people said it's like, oh, such a page-turning chapter, and so I think it's good it was included, and I think it was eye-opening maybe for a lot of people.
Yeah, perhaps the more charismatic the species, the more political and charged it becomes. I'm not really sure. You know, it is something. It is interesting. It brings out the worst in people. People just are so passionate, I guess. I don't know. Well, so who are some of the heroes and leaders that you do really look up to, and why?
Oh, that's a great question. Do you mean like kind of when it comes to the whales and the field of studying the whales and recovery, or what in particular?
You know, I think it could be both. It could be people totally outside whales or someone within the whale community.
Yeah. Well, personally, you know, one of my big heroes has always been Jane Goodall, and her love of a particular species and how that catalyzed her to become such an advocate for conservation. And, you know, that's been kind of a guiding force for me on my journey in a lot of ways. In terms of within the whale community, there are so many people that have made just incredible contributions to the field. It's hard to say just one. I don't know. I look up to a lot of people for a lot of different reasons, I guess.
Yeah, it is a hard question. I don't know how I'd answer that one either. It's like, depends on what day it is.
Yeah, and, you know, there's that whale politics layer in there, too. And there's, you know, a lot of people I respect for one reason. And then, you know, sometimes the politics come into play and there's some conflict on the flip side. So it's an interesting community, but there's a lot of really great people involved. One thing that was really interesting to me, you mentioned how I wore a lot of hats in the whale community, and how I had kind of the hesitation in the beginning that this was the right person to write this book. And it was kind of through this interview process where I really was interviewing a lot of my heroes in the field, because these were people that had been here decades before me kind of doing this work. And as I was interviewing these people that I had always looked up to, there were times when I would ask them a question and I would be surprised that they didn't know the answer to it. And I kind of realized that while they were specialists in whatever piece of the field they were a part of, the fact that I had worn all those different hats over the years of, you know, intern and researcher and naturalist and educator and advocate had really given me a unique perspective to kind of be the person that pulls together all these different viewpoints and interviews all these different people and kind of pulls together a cohesive story about the whales from that. So in some sense, while I, you know, obviously had huge support and input from so many important people, I sort of became, you know, my own champion of this story when I realized that maybe I really was the right person to tell it. So it was a very interesting process for sure.
And what's the best way for people to get a copy of your book?
Well, I definitely encourage people to purchase it from their local bookstore. And if they aren't carrying it, you can definitely request that they do so. And that's a great help for me to help get the book out there. You can also go to indiebound.org, and that allows you to order it online directly to a local independent bookstore in your area. And that works anywhere in the country, so you don't have to be here in Washington. And again, it's a great way to let your local bookstore know about the book. So I definitely encourage people to kind of support their local bookstores. And it is also available as an ebook as well, either through Amazon or through the Apple Store.
That's a really good point, because if you want her book through the, you know, your local bookstore, someone else probably does as well. So that would be a great way to get your hands on a copy of the book and also help support your book. So that's a great idea. Indiebound.com?
Dot org.
scoutpodcast.org. Perfect. I'll put a link to that with this podcast as well. Any last thoughts, Monica?
I don't think so. I just really welcome and encourage feedback on the book. And if anyone is compelled to leave a review about the book, that's super helpful as well on either Amazon or at Goodreads. That really kind of helps keep the book out there and lets other people know if you enjoyed it or not. And I just love hearing the feedback in any way, shape, or form, because I've been really close to this project for a long time, and it's been a really interesting experience to kind of have it out there in the world. And I love hearing what people think of it.
Well, thank you so much for writing the book and for coming on the podcast today to share about it and to talk about yourself. I know that's really challenging and uncomfortable at times. So I appreciate you taking the time today to chat with us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening today. If you enjoyed this show, you can go up to our website, whalescout.org, and find all of our old podcasts there. There's a lot of great episodes with Monica and a lot of other folks as well. And you can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and have them sent directly to your phone. As always, all the latest information is on our website, whalescout.org. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And thank you so much for listening. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to the Whale Scout podcast. Your voluntary donation goes toward the recovery of whale species and enhanced whale watching opportunities in the Pacific Northwest. Please visit www.whalescout.org for more information.